You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Hi, this is Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President for Public Policy and Culture at the James Dobson Family Institute. Welcome to our podcast, Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. Glad you're with us. Tell your friends about us. Well, not surprisingly, I'm a sports fan. I think millions of Americans, particularly American men, fall into that category. I grew up in northern Kentucky, right across the river from Cincinnati, Ohio. So growing up, I learned, along with my uncles and family, to be a big fan of the Cincinnati Reds baseball team. They had some great teams then. I've been a long-suffering fan since then, waiting for them to have some modern great teams. It's been a while. And then, of course, growing up in Kentucky, in college basketball, the Kentucky Wildcats, you know, they walked on water. I remain an avid fan of the Kentucky Wildcats. The joke is that if you injure a Wildcat fan, he bleeds blue because that's the color for the team. And, you know, at that time when I was growing up, soccer was not a big American sport, but you may have noticed, particularly in recent weeks, that more and more of your neighbors are talking about soccer, and that's because the 23rd FIFA World Cup Men's Soccer Championships are being held right now at venues all across America. I saw the other day, the estimates are, you know, you can't nail these things down exactly, but the estimates are that probably at least 1.2 million people have come from around the world to the United States to watch their national team play in the World Cup matches. And then this figure blew me away, and I've got to nail it down because I think it might mean how many times a person might watch multiple games, and then you add it all up together. But at any rate, the figure was that there will be 6 billion views of these soccer games before it's all over. It's an extraordinary figure, and it just shows you the popularity of the sport of soccer. And look, I still have fond memories of my days as a soccer dad when Carol and I would be cheering on our son, Zach, when he played for his high school, eventually leading them all the way to the state championship game his senior year. The fans of soccer, both locally and internationally, play a huge role in helping propel their team to victory because of the enthusiastic cheering and the sense of, you know, when it's international, the sense of you're cheering on your country. And we certainly have been seeing that in these first few couple of weeks. You know, the fans who have ventured to the United States to cheer on their side, they're no exception to this. We're seeing a lot of different ways fans from different countries celebrate their respective countries. The Scots have a particular type of way they celebrate. Some of it involves a lot of heavy drinking. The Norwegians, I'm sure you've seen this if you've looked at any of the games. The Norwegians have this thing where they're mimicking Vikings propelling a ship using oars. And it's really hilarious, but it's also kind of intimidating to see, you know, a couple thousand people doing that at the same time. So it is amazing to see all of these different traditions. There's something that's popped up, and I'm not sure I quite understand it. There's a well-known song that was first popularized by John Denver. The title's Take Me Home, Country Roads. But one of the lyrics is Take Me Home, West Virginia, I think. And that song, for some reason, has emerged as an unofficial anthem for the American team. And now even some European fans have adopted as well. I don't know, maybe it's a reflection of a yearning for simpler times or more community or, you know, an idealized version of what country life is like compared to our busy urban areas. Now, some of the international soccer fans, and this has become a thing, some of them have been astonished by what they've seen in America. They talk about our patriotism, how it's over the top, and a love of country that, quite frankly, isn't always the case, in particularly in a lot of Europe. You know, the globalists of Europe have tried to smother that individual national sense of patriotism in many of the countries that belong to the European Union. But these fans come here and they see in America that patriotism is clearly encouraged. I've seen some videos of European fans that were at one of the two American games. And first of all, they're astonished about how everybody joins in singing the national anthem. But then when these military jets or helicopters all of a sudden appear in the sky and fly over the stadium, first the European fans are shocked. And then they're like just in awe that we would have our military involved in celebrating the country during the soccer game. And as I said, the singing of the national anthem has been amazing. Let me play this for you, because maybe you haven't heard this yet. This is, I think, at the beginning of the first game by the men's team. And all they were doing was playing the instrumental of our national anthem. And listen to what happens. That was amazing. So again, that was just an instrumental. And somehow this beast, which is what I call tens of thousands of people in a great arena, all of a sudden, simultaneously, it starts out a little slow, but then they all are singing the national anthem. You will feel good to just watch it online. And you'll see something else that was so encouraging, which is that our soccer men's team, our men's soccer team, they're patriots too. I mean, they're all singing the national anthem. They all have their hands over their hearts. Did you notice? Nobody was taking a knee, you know, in protest. Nobody was turning around and showing their back to the flag, which we've seen happen a number of times over the years. I'm not going to name the teams, American teams, and individuals who have done that sort of stuff, because I want this to be an upbeat podcast with you. This is a big year in America. There's a lot to celebrate. And so I'm going to try to do my best to stay positive, although I'm sure I won't succeed every moment of the podcast. But look, it's great to watch a game, hear the national anthem, see the flyover, see the players showing their gratitude, and not have to worry that some player with a sense of entitlement is going to embarrass us in our country. So my hats go off to them for being not only great soccer players, but by being Americans. You know, something else is taking place here, in my view. I think this is a cultural moment, an educational moment. European fans who have traveled to the United States for the first time to watch the matches are posting on social media that they're seeing an America that they didn't expect to see. You know, really? What did you expect? Well, what they're saying themselves is, they are astonished at how welcoming Americans are. I mean, these tourists are falling in love with our country. Now, some of them rave about the food. This has been kind of funny because, look, there's different cultures and different practices everywhere, right? But a number of times, tourists have said that they went to a restaurant to get, you know, genuine American food, and they sat down at the table. They were shown to their table, and they sat down, and they're looking at the menu, and the waitress comes over and sets bread down in front of them. And they're like, they look at the waitress and say, excuse me, you must have us mixed up with somebody else. We haven't ordered bread. Ordered bread, the waitress said. We bring bread to all of our customers. Well, how much does it cost? It's free, sir. You're giving us the bread free? Yep, that's what we do here. You know, in some restaurants, the restaurant will bring little bowls of nuts or olives or whatever. How much is this going to cost? No, it comes with your meal, sir. One of the videos I saw, this was hilarious. So it was two young Brits, and they go into their first American rib house, barbecue rib house. And they've heard a lot about ribs, right? So they order the ribs, and the ribs come over. They're there on the plate, and they're looking at them, and they're astonished at how much meat are on these ribs. So they're looking at each other. They pick up a knife and fork, and they're getting ready to dig in when all of a sudden it doesn't look like a waiter. It looks like it might be the manager of the restaurant. He walks over and he says, excuse me. It's a very serious tone. Excuse me. We don't do that here. And these the two young Brits looked a little afraid. Sorry, sir, you, what are we doing? What don't you do here? And he kind of glared at him and he said, we don't use a knife and fork for our ribs. These are barbecue ribs. That's why I brought you all these moist toilettes here. You pick up the rib, kids, and you eat it. And the two Brits looked at each other, and that's exactly what they did. And they looked like they were in seventh heaven. And then there's things, I think this will surprise some people. The number of visitors that are raving about, drum roll, how many places in America are air conditioned? Now, I remember growing up and all we had was fans, but air conditioning is everywhere in America, but it's not, believe it or not, everywhere in Europe. There's a lot of major European cities where a majority of apartments and even homes do not have air conditioning, and it's actually a health hazard. I remember a few years back, or maybe it was a decade or so ago, there was a big heat wave that hit France, and they found, sadly, a lot of elderly French men and women who didn't have family checking on them, and they found that they had died in their apartments during this ferocious heat wave because they couldn't keep cool. They didn't have air conditioning. So, you know, again, we've got problems. I know. Look, people are worried about all sorts of things, but we have a lot of things and we enjoy a lot of things that just are not common things around the world. I've talked to economists who have told me, you know, Gary, what we consider living at the poverty rate in America, in a lot of places around the world, the income level and what you can get for that income level in those other countries, that would be considered sort of working class or even lower middle class. But here, we often say, well, that's a poverty-stricken family. So it's helpful to get some perspective, right? Now, people from Asia and Latin America and other places around the world, many of them are also saying, after they look around and experience all this, they say that they've been lied to. And what they mean is that their media in their countries have told them things about America that made them hesitate to come here. Even some of their leaders of their governments have said, we're better than America. And we don't have the problems America has. You better be careful when you go there. Well, they're coming here and they love it. They love, and look, I don't always experience this in Washington, D.C., but a lot of these visitors are getting out of the big cities and they're going out into the country and they're astonished at how many Americans smile all the time. When they go up to an American, they ask for directions. The American smiles back and says, well, you need to go over here. By the way, where are you from? I hope you're enjoying yourself. And this is astonishing, these visitors, that this is what they're finding in this country. And I don't know, this is kind of ironic, right? Because at the same time that a lot of these tourists are falling in love with America, and it is our 250th birthday, after all, but it's ironic that at the same time, there are a bunch of people in America, most of them on the far left of the American political spectrum, they're telling pollsters they don't much like America, let alone love it. There is a surprising number of self-described liberals and Democrats who are saying they're not proud of the country, and a number of them are saying the pollsters, I'd rather live someplace else. I don't know. You know, first thought that came to my mind is maybe we could, you know, work out a trade somehow. You know, we'll trade you, these folks that aren't proud to be Americans and would like to live someplace else, for some of these people from other countries that are here watching these soccer games and saying, looking around and saying, whoa, what a fantastic place to live. We could just do a one-for-one trade. You know, maybe we'd all be better off if we did that. I'm only partly kidding. You know, there's something else here that's worth talking about. Now, I want to say again, I understand that America has some economic challenges. A lot of people, both well-off people and working-class people, are wondering whether America is still the kind of place where you can start from humble beginnings and end up living the American dream. You know, getting that house in the suburb, being able to put a couple kids through college, and we're struggling about how to deal with that and how to make sure the American dream is still alive. Our 250th birthday is a good time to rededicate ourselves to making sure the American dream is still alive. But one of the things that's happening in the United States, out of concern about the American dream and free enterprise, is, as we've seen in New York and some of the other big cities, people are beginning to play footsie with socialism in bigger and bigger numbers. And we're seeing avowed socialists getting elected to office. And, you know, the irony I'm referring to here is that many of these foreign tourists are coming from countries that are have experienced for some time socialism, and they don't like it. There's rebellions going on in a lot of these countries. People that they thought they wanted socialism, and now they're beginning to vote for more conservative parties in Latin America and in Europe. Now, back to America, the momentum that political socialists have in America right now, it is astonishing. It would be, I think, a tragedy if we went down the same road of smothering government controls over every part of our lives, our economic life and social policy, the same thing that is crushing Europe and making European visitors yearn to live in a place like America. Well, I want to touch on something else about the American team. They not only love America, many of them love Jesus. Many of them are serious Christians. And, you know, many of the European fans, Europe is very unchurched. And many of the fans coming here may not know much about Christianity. So I'm going to deliver a message on behalf of the James Dobson Family Institute. If you plan on, as an American, visiting one of the World Cup matches in the coming days, I urge you to engage with these avid soccer fans from other countries and join them in their celebrations. But while they're experiencing our food and hospitality, this is a great opportunity to let them see our Christian faith too. Now, look, I would be the first to admit that it's not the easiest thing in the world for a lot of Americans to share the gospel with people. But the fact that people have come to the United States for the World Cup, and they're asking about our food, and they're asking about our patriotism, and they're asking about our family life and our traditions, what a wonderful opportunity to tell them about the role Christianity has played from the very beginning of America, and to share with them the fact that a lot of social scientists believe we may be in the middle of another Christian revival in the United States right now. So the World Cup atmosphere makes it really easy to show your love of Christ to our guests in America. They may want to know, why is America like this? Why do I feel so much at home? And you could link that to our Christian faith. So again, tell them about our faith and that our country was built on the idea that liberty comes from God. Tell them that all men, meaning all mankind, no matter what country they live in, bear the image of the creator of the world, whether they realize that or not. And, you know, if you run into them, maybe you're a waitress in a restaurant some of these fans come to. Maybe you're the restaurant manager, and you're engaging in these visitors from all over the world. You know what would be a great thing? Ask them what they're doing on Sunday. Say, hey, you might want to come by and visit my local church. If you don't visit a church, you're really not going to get the full American experience. And we got a great choir. If you've been loving the music you're hearing, wait till you hear my choir sing at our church. I'll guarantee you it'll be an experience unlike anything you've ever seen before. I've watched with great happiness and joy as the American soccer team players have expressed their Christian faith on the field. You may have noticed this, that often before and after the games, our soccer players form a circle. One of the players, who's their spiritual leader, is in the middle of the circle, and they pray together. They thank God for either the game that they're going to be playing in or the game that they just completed. And I understand that there's a movement going on. I haven't been able to track down who's doing it, but somebody out there, maybe if you know, you can let us know at the James Dobson Family Institute, somebody out there has organized churches around the country, and they're doing soccer watch parties at their church. And they're doing that not particularly aiming at visitors, but doing that to get the local community to come in and watch the game on big screen TVs at the church and then learning a little bit about Jesus while they're at it. You know, a lot of secular people from socialist or Marxist countries may feel an emptiness in their lives that's not only economic, but it may very well be spiritual as well. Some might even be brought to Christ if our hospitality extends beyond food and goes into faith. America truly is an exceptional nation. We have brought more freedom and more prosperity to more people than any nation in history. It's our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution that inspires freedom around the world. When there are pro-democracy demonstrations in other countries that are not free, no insult to anybody else, but they don't wave the Swedish flag or the Colombian flag, they'll often wave the American flag. And I think, you know, as we've talked about before, we too often take our freedom and liberty for granted. We become complacent and we assume America is always going to be America. Ronald Reagan, who I was blessed to work for, famously warned that freedom is fragile And he said over and over again, it's never more than one generation away from extinction. We must protect and defend our freedom. And it ought to encourage us to do so when we see so many people visiting right now who are yearning for the freedom and the opportunities we have. We must rise to the occasion. In the meantime, here at the James Dobson Family Institute, we're going to do everything we can to encourage and equip you as we fight the good fight for faith, family, and freedom. Well, I hope you enjoyed our time together. Come back, and we'll have a lot more on all the big things happening in America that affects faith, family, and freedom. God bless you.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.